And join us every Monday at 6:30 right here on KGNU 88.5, Denver, Boulder, and Fort Collins, or anytime at kgnu.org/outsources or news.kgnu.org. Good night.
About 30 seconds after 7 o'clock, and we are KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Good evening. I'm Chris Moore, and I'll be your host for Opera Box from 7 to 8 tonight. And we will be featuring a little bit later an interview with Greg Carpenter, and then some of the ravishingly beautiful music from Donizetti's from Lucia di Lammermoor, his greatest tragedy, probably. So we'll be hearing some of that music and seeing why it's so worthwhile for you to take the pilgrimage to the Ollie Calkins Opera House in Denver and see a live performance of this. It's been 15 years since Opera Colorado has done it, so you don't want to wait another 15 years. You want to catch it, and we'll be telling you why momentarily.
Join us every Monday evening from 10 to midnight for The Present Edge. The best new music in the classical tradition. Organic, electronic, experimental, art as sound, essential music, up to the minute. The Present Edge, every Monday from 10 to midnight, right here on KGNU.
This program is made possible by you, the KGNU listener member, and by Boulder Bookstore, Boulder's community bookstore on the Pearl Street Mall, hosting T.R. Reed, author of A Fine Mess, A Global Quest for a Simpler, Fairer, and More Efficient Tax System, on Thursday, April 20th at 7:30 p.m. More information at boulderbookstore.com or by calling 303-447-2074.
Before we talk too much, I want to play just one brief excerpt from the first act of Lucia di Lammermoor, a beautiful solo aria, and then from there we will bring Greg Carpenter in. He's the general director of Opera Colorado, and he, of course, is the central force, I guess you might say, behind the upcoming production of Lucia di Lammermoor by Donizetti.
Draw the earth round.
Greg, as we're zeroing in on the... Brief excerpt from the first act, a brief aria from the first act of Lucia di Lammermoor. That's a performance with Roberta Peters that is a rather classic recording, actually. She has fallen in love with the wrong man, and Edgardo and Enrico are mortal enemies, and they have recently acquired through the treachery the Ravenswood estates. And so things are not going well between her lover and her brother at this point. And she is talking about how she has, in this wistful, pathetic melody, she has seen in the dark waters an apparition of a murdered woman. Let's talk now with Greg McAllister from Opera Colorado. And he's going to give us a little bit of a introduction to our opera today. And this is going to be, again, an opera that's going to be performed next month at Opera Colorado at the L.A. Calkins Opera House. You're very busy, so thank you for taking a few minutes out to talk to us here at KGNU.
My pleasure. Thanks for having us on the program.
Our show, because it's KGNU, there are people who may have never heard of Lucia di Lammermoor. And so I would have to say that the first reason to go see this opera would be that it's just achingly beautiful. It's probably one of the most beautifully composed operas in terms of the sheer loveliness of the music that's ever come out there.
You know, it really is. And Donizetti, I think, obviously was a great melodist. Wonderful things that you can, you might say, hum as you leave the opera house. But I think he does capture in so many great ways the essence of the drama in his music, particularly if you're looking at Lucia's first act aria. The Cavatina and Cabaletta really gives you a sense of the drama and what she's feeling in the music. And the same thing, of course, with the famous mad scene, which is an extended scene for the soprano, where you do feel musically as well as dramatically that she is deteriorating into madness. So I think he's a genius at capturing the drama in music.
Isn't that, what is it, 13 minutes long or something, that mad scene?
Yeah, it's an extended scene, and of course it has very light orchestra underneath it, but the harp and the flute play a big part in echoing, you might say, what Lucia is singing. It's sort of a trio when you really think about how it's written.
And so maybe the instruments, in a sense, are... capturing some of the melodies, the reminder of her past and her love and everything.
Certainly that, but I think they, particularly the flute, the combination of flute and of harp, gives this sort of ethereal, otherworldly feeling to the music that really reflects this complete breakdown in some ways that she's having, this meltdown.
This is one of many operas where a woman gets treated badly, 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 and finally dies. How do you, as a general director and directors in general, as in the 21st century, handle the treatment of women in the 19th century, and how do we bring it into a way that's relevant to 21st century audiences?
Well, you know, I think that's always a challenge with opera that's 19th century, mm-hmm. And in this case, based on an 18th century story. You know, Sir Walter Scott's novel was published in 1819, but is really a story about something that happens in the late 16th, early 17th centuries, or excuse me, late 17th, early 18th centuries. Mm-hmm. And so the sensibilities are obviously different than they are today. But if you look at the idea of arranged marriage, which basically this is, they're arranging mm-hmm. a marriage that is advantageous to the family, but not necessarily in favor of Lucia, obviously.
Yes.
Those still happen in some cultures and societies, so you can certainly, you know, look at it from that perspective.
Or any story about the disempowerment of women,
yeah,
where their choices
exactly,
are being taken away from
you know, them. And I think the interesting thing about this story is getting inside each of the characters' heads and understanding what's motivating them, because mm-hmm. they all have personal motivations. Enrico, Lucia's brother, clearly feels the pressure of not only saving sort of the family fortune, but it's the family's honor mm-hmm. in so many ways that he's trying to regain, not just save, but in some ways regain. And by aligning the family with Arturo, the man that he is forcing Lucia to marry, that is secure. Arturo's family has money, it has prestige, power, political mm-hmm. power particularly, and those are all the things that are desired by Enrico, both personally and for the family. And so that forced marriage is really focused on raising the family up and raising his profile, at obviously the detriment or the risk, you might say, of Lucia. But then you also look at it from Edgardo's side. Edgardo is a man that Lucia has met. He is basically their neighbor when you think about it, mm-hmm. you know, logistically. Their estates abut each other. And she has met him as a young girl and has probably had an infatuation with him early, mm-hmm. you know, in her life as a young child. But has grown to love him. Lucia was, I think even in the novel, she's 16 or 17 years old. Edgardo's in his early 20s. So, you know, she has basically grown to love him over a period of time. And she's done that outside of the family's feuding, you might say, or outside of politics or outside of any of that family stress. And so forth. And so you have to look at their relationships in this almost very innocent way. And so forth. So it's these conflicting needs and desires of each character that come into play that creates this intense drama of, you know, forcing her to sign a marriage contract, literally forcing her, putting a hand on her hand and forcing mm-hmm. her to sign that contract. And now how many people, how many characters in the opera are plotting to make that happen? Mm-hmm. She has, you know, maybe, depending on how you play the character of Raimondo, the priest, and it can be played as a sympathetic character who's trying to help her understand and trying to help her emotionally deal with what's happening in the family. You can play him that way, or you can play him as a co-conspirator in the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then, so, you know, if he's a co-conspirator, really the only confidant she has, the only person that's on her side outside of the man she loves is her nursemaid, mm-hmm. Alice, Alice, who has probably been her nurse since a child, or her nanny, you might say, in more contemporary terms. So it's this amazing confluence of everybody's interests at opposition in some ways that all comes crashing down on Lucia as the person that is being manipulated throughout the opera.
Before the full scale of the tragedy reveals itself, though, we do get to see Lucia and Edgardo in love and expressing their love for one another. Tell us a little bit about that music, about that love duet in the first act.
Oh, that duet is probably one of the greatest duets of bel canto repertoire.
Mm-hmm. And bel canto means, again, so
beautiful singing. I mean, it's just
that's what
it's
this
gorgeous
is.
Singing. Bel canto is a style of singing mm-hmm. that's all about a long legato line and the finessing of that beautiful melody and line.
And it's about love in this case.
Yeah, and very much so. Yeah. You know, that's sort of a three-part aria that has different emotions in it. First of all, wrangling with the fact that her brother doesn't want her to marry Edgardo, and she knows that already. Mm-hmm. To the point of, by the end of that wonderful duet that they sing in the first act, of basically making a vow that they're going to secretly marry. They're going to ignore the pressures of family and of community, you might say, and they're going to do what they want to do. And I think that's the beauty of that moment in the opera, is sort of forsaking all others and all mm-hmm. of the pressures that they feel, that they're going to move ahead and make themselves happy. Mm-hmm. And if you, again, put this in the context of time period, that doesn't happen very often. You know, right. It's usually just succumbing to what the family wants, and you do it for family honor.
Right.
Yeah. Te, Maria viva, sei.
There's a melody that goes through. You hear it. You hear them singing it. You hear it in the flute part later in the mad scene. It's kind of da 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 da. And it actually reminds me a little bit of the use of leitmotifs that Wagner did like 50 years, 70 years later. Can you talk a little bit about that melody, or how Donizetti uses melodies to unfold over time for dramatic purposes?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a great example, and certainly Wagner became the person that is probably most well known for what we call leitmotifs, or motifs that are attached to either a dramatic situation or a specific character. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it's that dramatic situation, it's that wonderful melody that they actually sing in unison, which I think is important too, mm-hmm. In that duet. So they are of one mind when they're singing mm-hmm. in unison about this love they have for each other. And that does come back chiefly, or mainly, in the final scene for her, the mad scene that she mm-hmm. sings after she's murdered Arturo, her newlywed husband.
Spoiler alert, spoiler
sorry,
alert.
Sorry, sorry. But and you know, she's wandering through the house with all the party guests still having a great time with a dagger in her hand, and she's, you know, the whole mad scene is reminiscing, going through her mind. What has happened, and her remembering and understanding her love for Edgardo. And so bringing that melody back actually attaches that earlier wonderful dramatic love scene, love duet, mm-hmm. to what's going through her mind now. It's a real strong link dramatically to her passion and her love for Edgardo. And a lot of great operas do that. Puccini brings melodies back all the time throughout his operas mm-hmm. That reattach us in some way. Sometimes subliminally, we don't quite know what's happening, but it reattaches us to something that's happened earlier in the opera. It's a dramatic sequence, or it is, oh, that's Lucia, that's Mimi's melody, or that's Musetta's melody, or something like that. And certainly, I think it's a dramatic device, musical device that allows us to understand, I think, and become more emotionally involved in the piece.
We've been talking with Greg Carpenter. I had a moment of brain confusion earlier. Greg Carpenter is the general director, that's his correct name, of Opera Colorado. And Lucia de Lammermoor of Donizetti is taking place May 6th, May 9th, May 12th, and May 14th at the L.A. Calkins Opera House in Denver. And I very strongly encourage you to come and see it. It is a beautiful opera, and it is a very, very tragic one. We are going to actually get back and talk more with Greg Carpenter next week, because there's so much great music in Lucia, I thought I would stretch it out over 2 weeks. And so that's exactly what we're going to do. So for the next 15 minutes or so, we're going to hear some of the music of Act Two of Lucia di Lammermoor. She's being forced into a marriage that she does not want with a man she does not love. And as Greg has already told us, that will eventually drive her to madness and murder. But for now, let's hear the happy chorus of, I guess you might say, innocent people in the palace who are very excited for this marriage in the family.
Thank you. amicizia vuol giungere, or la vedrem. Se in lei sover chi è la mestizia, ma ravvigliarti, no, no, non dei, dal duolo pressa e vinta, piange la madre estinta.
Menoto, sì, sì, menoto,
perché la mestizia.
Grandio,
appressa, o dolce in
quel contento
nello sforzo di dolor.
Ah, cessate! Un fiero evento.
Tu mi avrò, ci terrò.
Dalle stanze ove Lucia tratta me sorte, un lamento, un grido usciva, come d'uom vicino a morte, corsi ratto in quelle mura, ai terribile. Arturo al suol giaceva, muto freddo, insanguinato, e Lucia la ciò stringeva, che fuggia nel trucidato. Ella in me le luci affigge, il mio sposo ov'è? Mi disse, e nel volto suo pallente un sorriso maleno, infelice della mente, la virtù di a lei mancò, a lei.
Excerpts from Act 2 and Act 3 of Lucia di Lammermoor, music of Donizetti from the, I guess, about the 1830s or so. And a beautiful opera from start to finish. Actually, some of the most beautiful music you can imagine. A great Italian composer. Maybe not as well known as Puccini or Verdi or Wagner, but in many ways every bit as good. One of the two great bel canto composers of the early 19th century, the other being Bellini. We heard Roberta Peters, our soprano, and she sang the role of Lucia. Jan Pierce, tenor, was Edgardo. Baritone Philip Mero was Lord Enrico. Bass Giorgio Tozzi was Raimondo. Piero de Palma, the tenor, as Lord Arturo, and mezzo-soprano Miti Trucato Pace as Elisa, the companion to Lucia. The Rome Opera Orchestra and Chorus, Eric Leinsdorf conducting, a recording that goes all the way back to 1957. And now, to hear a 2017 performance live, you can go to Opera Colorado. Just go to operacolorado.org and get ticket information. There's so much beautiful music, as I said before, that we are just going to go ahead and play more of not only the interview with Greg Carpenter, the rest of the interview, but also we'll be playing next week more excerpts from this glorious opera as well. So again, that's May 6th, 9th, 12th, 14th. So let's come to CU Boulder here. A couple things that I found very, very interesting. And one of them is that, well, recently the very good performance of the Magic Flute took place. That was in the mid-March. But now April 27th through 30th is not that far away. And that's when they're doing Red, Hot, and Cole, celebrating Cole Porter, the great American songwriter who brought style, elegance, and sophistication to Broadway and Hollywood with sexy sensibility, fresh melodies, and a great sassiness. So this is kind of a more popular sort of thing, some great jazzy songs, Broadway-type tunes. And it's going to be sung by members of the Eklund Opera Theater Group. And those are some very, very fine operatic singers who can also, of course, master things like these great jazz classics. One of those is Nadia Hill. She's going to be playing a major role in this. And she was a finalist at the Denver Lyric Opera Guild competition that I encouraged you all to go to last month. And so I thought I would play a couple excerpts of her as an opera singer, not as a Cole Porter singer, because this is an opera show after all. But she will be the voice, one of the voices that you will hear in this Cole Porter review, Red, Hot, and Cole.
Oh. Thank you.
Nadia Hill, who is about to get her master's degree at CU Boulder and is a part of the Eklund Opera Ensemble, the program there at CU Boulder. And they're putting on Red Hot and Cold, and music that is entirely different from Handel, which we just heard there. Cole Porter, the great American songwriter, is going to be featured in this play, or series of musical vignettes, I guess you might say, April 27th through the 30th. So check it out. There are actually characters. There is a little bit of a thin plot, but it's, of course, the main thing is just the excuse to hear those great Cole Porter songs again, as they are put together so well. April 27th through the 30th at CU Boulder, and do go to cupresents.org for ticket information for that. Well, we have about 7 minutes left, and another thing of great interest that just happened a few days ago at CU Boulder was a masterclass with the great, great mezzo, Michelle DeYoung, and she sang, as well as many masterclass teachers don't sing or play or perform in front of their students, because, but Michelle is not shy about doing that, and she does that to show them certain vocal techniques she's trying to get through to them, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the singers who was there sang an Alban Berg song that just has been haunting me ever since, that masterclass. So we're going to enjoy that right now. It's The Nightingale. It's one of the seven early songs of Alban Berg. And from there, we're going to perhaps, I think we might have time for one or two more songs out of those seven early songs of Alban Berg. Here we have a performance with soprano Jesse Norman. Anne Shine is playing the piano, and Pierre Boulez conducts the London Symphony Orchestra.
Was singt in Heil und Wohl, Heil, die Ruhe.
Two of the seven early songs of Alban Berg, Pierre Boulez conducting the London Symphony Orchestra in that performance. On that same CD, you can hear Anne Shine accompanying the great Jesse Norman in some of these performances. Bringing us up to about 20 minutes, or 20 seconds rather, before 8 o'clock, we are KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm Chris Moore. Thanks for listening to Opera Box. And most of our show tonight featured the incredibly beautiful music of Lucia di Lammermoor. And next week, we will hear more amazingly beautiful music from Lucia di Lammermoor. So do come back next Monday and hear some more. We can talk a little bit more with Greg Carpenter as well. So she should enjoy all of that and then hopefully enjoy the opera itself. And, of course, then the performance that I was talking about with Cole Porter coming up. So you can go to cupresents.org. To hear Nadia Hill and a number of other great singers from the Eklund Opera program. Let's jump now to a Classic Monday, because of course today, this evening, is all about classical music. From 7 to 8 we have opera, from 8 to 10 we have classical music, and from 10 to midnight we have Present Edge, which is contemporary music inspired by the classical tradition in one way or another. So stay tuned all through the evening. As long as you stay awake, stay with us here at KGNU, and I think you'll enjoy it. Again, I'm Chris Moore, and we're going to start our time here with a kind of a preview, I guess you might say, of a very special Colorado Ballet performance at their Black Box Theater, Piazzolla en sus Palabras. And it's the story of Astor Piazzolla, Argentina's most illustrious musician and composer, and the father of Tango Nuevo, told through dance, narrative, and live music. And he went to France and went to some of the greatest theorists and teachers that France had to offer. And they basically just said, like Nadia Boulanger especially, just said, look, I would ruin you if I teach you anything, because you were a great composer of tango, or tango-inspired music, I guess you might say, in the classical. And just keep putting those two things together, and it would be, and you'll do fine. And of course, thank God she said that, because Piazzolla wasn't terribly confident. This actually happened with Ravel as well. Maurice Ravel, the great French composer, this young George Gershwin came knocking on his door one day and said, I'd like to get lessons. And Ravel said, well, why would you want to do that? If I gave you lessons, you would be second-class Ravel, and as it is, you're first-class Gershwin. And basically gave him the confidence to be George Gershwin. So it was a great thing that both of them did. This performance that's coming up this weekend, Friday and Saturday, I believe, Joey Wishnia as Astor Piazzolla, the Austin Piazzolla Quintet, Argentine tango dancers from Parasol Arts and Natural Tango, artists from the Colorado Ballet, all directed and created by Larita Travaglia. Two shows only, on Friday, April 21st at 8, and Saturday, April 22nd, also at 8, Colorado Ballet Black Box Theater at 1075 Santa Fe Drive in Denver, actually 3.5 blocks away from the KGNU Denver studio, as it were. So you can go to Parasol Arts if you want to find it on Facebook and just get some more information about the show there. And you can also phone and text 720-220-7438 for more information. Hey, let's take a listen now to some music of Astor Piazzolla. Sergio and Oder Assad, brothers and great guitarists, both of them. And we're going to hear two works of Piazzolla, Lo que vendrá and Escolazo.